Talk Law Radio with Todd Marquardt is sponsored by the Marquardt Law Firm and does not attempt to solve your individual legal problems upon the basis of information contained herein. Instead, contact an attorney to discuss the specific facts and circumstances of your unique situation. The views and opinions of this program do not reflect the views of the Salem Media Group.
It's time for Talk Law Radio with Todd Marquardt. Todd Marquardt, attorney at law in Texas. If you're a millionaire or a thousandaire, Talk Law Radio is now on the air. Call in with your business law question, your elder law question, veteran aid, Medicaid, build a business to get paid. 210-308-8867. Or ask a question online at marquardtlawfirm.com. That's M-A-R-Q-U-A-R-D-T, lawfirm.com. And now, it's Talk Law Radio with Todd Marquardt.
Welcome to Talk Law Radio. I'm Todd Marquardt on the radio, on podcasts, on Facebook, on YouTube, and on talklawradio.com. Today's going to be a great show because this is where I help you discover your legal issue blind spots by listening to me talk about the law on the radio. Before we get started talking about the law, let's begin with prayer. Dear God, thank you for this day. Thank you for all the gifts and blessings that you give to us. Please forgive us for our sins, for our mistakes, for doing the wrong thing or failing to follow your will. Please help Kirk and me give good information about the definition of proper estate planning today. Help us to do everything we do for the good of your people, for our own good, and for your glory. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
Today we're going to be talking about the definition of proper estate planning. With me is Kirk Harrison. He's going to be asking me some questions about estate planning and trusts today. And it's important that we have an estate plan regardless of the size of our estate, because if you don't have anything, then there's chaos.
Yeah, that's something we were discussing off mic here. We talked about the fact that a lot of people, including myself, think of an estate as a big house, big land, lots of money. But really, as Todd explained to me, it's a lot less than that. Your favorite pair of boots, your favorite hat, could be
anything.
Here in Texas, of course, a nice
Stetson. That's what the probate code or the Texas estates code would define an estate as. Whatever you own when you pass away, and even your body is a part of your estate.
Wow.
Yeah, so we want to have a good plan. And after we talk about the definition of estate planning, we'll talk about permission slip planning versus instruction-based planning. We'll talk about stipulations for your spouse, if you have one. And we'll talk about the jerk, the witch. Business setbacks, divorce, economic downturns, and frivolous litigation.
Yeah, doesn't. I've seen a lot of that myself. I'm sure everyone has, where, after especially a messy divorce, I'm guessing what Todd's going to explain here is if you do it right, it takes a little bit of the mess out of messy divorces or messy breakups by partners and other people involved. So,
right. Most
that'd be great.
Most people don't get married with the divorce in mind.
Yeah.
It just happens like when you slip on a banana peel.
Or unless you're a Kardashian.
Yeah, so we said our prayer, and so now we're going to go into the definition. The definition is we want to control our property while we're alive and to take care of us and our loved ones if we become incapacitated. And to give what we have to whom we want, the way we want, when we want. Furthermore, if we can, to minimize and eliminate taxes, legal fees, professional fees, if legally possible.
Good luck. That right there, you eliminate fees, man. You cut out taxes, you're making me a happy person, man. Ever since I heard about that death tax, that just blows me away. You pay it your whole life, and then all of a sudden you die, and they're coming for you one more dig.
Right. Yeah, you paid income tax on it already, but now you're going to pay estate tax. Some people, anyway.
That's amazing.
But because we're going to be talking about the law, I want to give a disclaimer. The State Bar of Texas is the state agency that governs attorney law licenses, and the State Bar wants attorneys to inform the public about the law, but because legal advice must be tailored to the circumstances of each case, and because laws are ever-changing, material discussed in this program is meant for general informational purposes only and is not to be construed as tax, legal, or investment advice. Although the information has been gathered from sources believed to be reliable, please note that individual situations can vary. Therefore, the information you learn today should be relied upon only when coordinated with individual professional advice. By the way, Marquardt Law Firm is sponsoring our show today, and attorneys at Marquardt Law Firm focus on business and estate law, including last wills, living trusts, and tax-protected inheritance plans. Also, new businesses and old businesses which might have issues with corporations, contracts, LLCs, family limited partnerships, and our attorneys can represent those who are facing problems from lack of planning, like in district court, county court, or probate court. So what happens if you don't have a will? If you die without a will, then the state law determines.
You hear that a lot, too, because it goes to that where the judge basically sits down and says, you know, parcels out what you saved all your life, and it doesn't always go the way you want. You know, the old king's inheritance where the oldest gets the spoils.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those things kind of come into play. You know, it's funny when he was just talking earlier about his law firm and all that, you know, you want to go with somebody that you trust. A lot of people don't have lawyers, and especially lawyers that delve into this particular case. So it's really important when you listen here. I mean, where else are you going to go when you can hear on the radio and you're getting free law advice, okay? So here you go. You know, he's going to delve into it, and it gets a little thick, okay, at times. But if you listen well and take a little pen out, probably the most important thing you're going to write down is the name and the phone number for his group, because they'll go ahead and give you a come in and talk to him. I mean, that's all you got to do. So if you don't have a lawyer, then,
most
you know,
people,
give these guys a shot.
Most people try and avoid getting caught up in the law their whole lives, because that usually means you're in trouble.
And there's a name, you know, it goes along with lawyers. There's all kinds of people. Shakespeare himself even had a interesting term on that.
Okay, so got to have a will. Where there's a will, there's a way. Where there's no will, well, then there's the state law that determines who gets to divide up your things. And it could lead to unnecessary estate and income taxes. It could lead to your estate being consumed by your creditors, your estate being tied up in probate court, and other undesirable results. And it's perhaps the most costly and emotionally draining way to pass your assets to your loved ones.
I had a friend of mine that I worked with. He was a maintenance manager. And I remember he got divorced. And then I talked to him about, I don't know, a year and a half later, you know, just in conversation. He said he remarried his wife that he divorced. And I asked him, I said, man, well, wait a minute. You just got divorced from her and you remarried? He goes, I missed my stuff. So obviously he didn't have it set up properly, and he wanted to get his stuff back.
Right.
I don't think that's the way to build a good marriage, but anyhow.
Right. But it's a funny story. So remember, the first part of the definition of estate planning was we want to control our property while we're alive. So this is now, like when we're healthy and we're using our income to finance our lifestyle, we're saving up for retirement. If you decide to set up a living revocable trust, the IRS calls that type of trust a grantor trust, which means the income is taxed to the grantor, the person that created it. So basically everything stays the same if you create a trust, and you're just going to be the primary beneficiary yourself.
That makes sense. That's you just don't think about stuff like this. This is, you know, when people get into these conversations, they get pretty heavy, okay, when you're sitting down. And I'm sure Todd would tell you, you know, you got to set some time aside, because one, it's all new terminology. I know for me it is. And just understanding the terminology and asking a lot of questions is going to be pretty important. So here's your chance. You know, if you call in, you know, you'll get a couple answers right here. So it'll help you get on that path to where, as long as Big Brother doesn't have to get all your money, you know, Uncle Sugar comes, you want to go ahead and have something you keep for your kids or your wife or whoever is left behind.
That's right. And every family is different, so they want to divide things up in different ways. A lot of people tell me they just want to keep things simple, but in the next breath, then they describe something very complicated.
Complex, yes. Right. That's true.
But you're right about the terminology. And so I try and explain things in a simple way. But if you need more information, you can always go to our website and read the articles that I've written. And also I have YouTube videos on the law firm website. That's MarquardtLawFirm.com. There's lots of short YouTube videos because during COVID, I had to close the office.
Yeah.
And so I just made a new video every day for lots of videos. And so there's lots of information on there. It's in bite-sized little chunks.
You can mark that down, folks. You're talking about something positive that came out of COVID. You're not going to hear that too often,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
So it's a good return there when you get some advice you can get on YouTube, and everybody has access to YouTube.
And nobody anticipated that COVID would happen. You don't plan for tragedy.
Right.
You don't put tragedy on the calendar. And so it's important that we do our planning while we're healthy and alive, and we don't know when the tragedy is going to come.
Right.
But it will come. We know that in this life, we will struggle. It says that in the Bible. And so the first struggle that we might face is if we or one of our family members becomes disabled or incapacitated. And so this is another section of our planning that I want to talk about. This is where we can decide how we want to take care of us and our loved ones if we become disabled. That's part of the definition of proper estate planning.
That's, you know, the old saying, you know, nobody's getting out alive, okay? So sooner or later, you got to set up and say to yourself, hey, let me get this right, you know, and it's more than just a will. And you'll hear as Todd goes on here that it's more than just a will. It's got a little more oomph to it. And hopefully it'll help your family that you're going to be leaving behind. That's pretty important.
Because doctors have figured out how to keep us alive a long time.
Yeah.
And so the statistics say that chances are we'll become disabled before we die. Now, some people go to be with the Lord
yeah.
without having to spend one day of disability. But the rest of us, we might have to spend our time in assisted living or nursing home or hospital care. And this is where a good estate planning attorney can help you develop a plan. And right. there's two kinds of plans. One I call permission slip planning, and the other I call instructional care planning. The permission slip planning is using power of attorney documents where you just name someone you trust to make financial, legal, or medical and health care decisions.
Thank you, folks. Tune back in. You'll get the answers.
Secure your future today with Marquardt Law Firm. Gain peace of mind with a free consultation, crafting wills, trusts, and vital estate plans, guidance on elder law, Medicaid, veteran benefits, and more. Shield against legal hassles with their defense against Medicaid estate recovery. Trust in their proficiency for business law solutions, contracts, incorporations, and more. Empower your tomorrow. For info, go to MarquardtLawFirm.com. That's MarquardtLawFirm.com.
Welcome to Talk Law Radio. I'm Todd Marquardt here with Kirk Harrison talking about the definition of proper estate planning. And we just got through talking about the first part of the definition, which is when we're alive, we want to take care of us and control our property. And if we become disabled, we want to take care of us and our disabled loved ones if we become disabled. So sometimes we have a family member that is dependent on us for financial right. support, whether that's a minor child or a child that is independent at one time but has some struggles with life, and you have to help them out after that for some period of time. Or if you have a disabled child, the first question comes up as to how you want to structure your plan. If I become incapacitated and somebody else is dependent on me for financial support, do I want to cut off that support, that financial support, because my expenses are higher?
Right.
Or do I want to keep financially supporting them even though my expenses are going up? So if you're doing permission slip planning, this is where people get confused. The agent under durable power of attorney will come into my office and say, I've been named power of attorney. Now, what do I do?
But let me ask you something. Right? You said durable. What does that mean if he's a durable power of attorney instead of just an attorney showing up?
Good question. There's a couple different power of attorney documents, and one of them's durable. And the durability of it came about because in the old days, you could only name somebody as your agent, and your agent only had power to act for you so mm-hmm. long as you had capacity. If you lost capacity, if you could no longer mentally make decisions, then your agent lost his authority to make decisions for you also. But the law changed so that the courts would stop being overrun with guardianships, and the law then allowed the agent to maintain his authority to make decisions even though the principal decision maker had lost capacity. So that's the durability of it.
Okay. That makes sense. No.
But it's a great question, because then the very next question after that would be, when do you want your power of attorney to be effective?
Okay.
Do you want it to be
effective? So at a certain point in time. Okay.
Right. Do you want it to be effective immediately, even though you're still healthy and making your own decisions? Or do you want it to be effective only when a physician certifies in writing that you're incapacitated?
Man, I hope my wife's not listening, because I'm sure that she'll get forward and she'll declare me some kind of incapacitated mentally. And next thing I know, you know, she's going to have me sign something and I'll be living in the doghouse all the time.
Yeah. So the difference is that doctor's certification. But but that goes to the durable power of attorney. And that's a permission slip. It's just where you name somebody.
Right.
And then the document will say a list of things that they're allowed to make decisions about. But they don't know really what you would want. You just have to trust that they're going to use good judgment and good sense.
Right.
So you want to pick somebody who's trustworthy. If you use a living revocable trust, on the other hand, you can put instructions in there about how you want your money to be spent. And so I call that the take care of clause, how I want you to take care of me when I'm disabled and incapacitated. Mm-hmm. And so in that section of the trust, you can have any number of beneficiaries even while you're still alive.
Okay.
You can have yourself and your spouse, and then maybe those financially dependent children or parents even. If you're still taking care of your parents and they rely on you for financial support, if God forbid something happens to you or me, would we still want to take care of that financial obligation?
Let me ask you this, though. When a person, let's say, does pass on, and let's say the wife has some type of power or anything on it, when she remarries, does that overcome the fact that wouldn't pass to him, that would just be her, or it would just be the way you instruct it still, even though
there are lots of ways to structure that if you're married after one spouse dies. And I'll talk more specifics about that. But thank you for bringing that up. This is a situation when you're disabled. Most happily married couples would probably want to take care of the healthy spouse. You know, in Texas, because of community property, most people share a bank account, for example. I run into some that have separate accounts, and then that's when you would want to decide, is my spouse going to be the person that has access to my separate account? Because you could name somebody else, an adult child, a friend, or other family member to take the place of the spouse. That might put you in the doghouse.
Yeah, that's going to cause a little bit of tension, I can tell you that. But thank goodness my wife already controls all my money, so I don't have to worry about that.
It's important to name somebody you trust anyway.
Right, I would understand that, yeah. You know, families, I notice if you appoint a family member now, because of the fact that, you know, people have been known each other since the beginning, okay? And it always seems like when I read about after something happens, like a disaster where a family member dies and all, man, they change, it seems, almost completely, you know? So something like this really helps you out, okay? Because family member might not be the person that's what they would say, you're too close to it, okay? Yeah. So sometimes choosing a friend that you have met over the course of many years and was liable, man, you might want to consider that, because he's got that, you know, that far away look, okay, that 360 look that maybe family members and all that are too close to it didn't see. So, you know, when you're considering that, I guess that's one of the points that you would point out. Hey, you want to really consider, you know, who you're choosing.
Right. I guess it's a psychological thing when there's a tragedy in the family, and there might be some deep-seated resentments that have been growing. I listened to one attorney at a seminar. He said, you estate planners have it easy. He said the divorce attorneys have it easy. You know, they knew their spouse maybe 5, 10, 20 years. But the sibling rivalries, they've hated each other for 50 years.
That's right.
By the time their parents pass away and they get to fight over it. So you could name a bank to be a trustee, and then you take all the family out of it. And what I tell my clients is I'd rather the bank steal from me than my own family.
Well, because they're so good at it. Heck, why not name the IRS? They're the best in the world at taking your money.
Yeah. Well, so going back to this disability take care of clause provision, you could put these beneficiaries in order of priority. So you could say me and my spouse equally at the same time. And if there's enough, then to provide for our financially needy children or our financially needy parents. And so it gives the successor trustee, that friend that you've named, a little bit of discretion to decide what's financially prudent to budget, take care of who needs to be taken care of, and to stop the financial support for those when it doesn't make sense.
Right.
Another question is, do you want to keep giving to charity? If you've given to your church or charity your whole life, this is another clause that we can put in this disability section.
Yeah, and you talk about that, it makes me think of we have a cat that's a polydactyl. They actually have thumbs, workable thumbs.
Really?
They can actually grab things.
Like a raccoon.
Yes. But the thing is, the author down in Key West, who we all know, all right, dedicated a whole house to those cats. The whole house is full of the cats.
I'm glad you brought that up too, because I've been thinking of creating a pet trust for my dog, Lexi, because she's going to need to continue her agility training if something bad happens to me, and she will need to have a place to live. And I don't know which of my children will take care of her the way that I did.
Right. The way you're talking, I don't see it happening, but yeah.
So in that case, you have a trustee who's going to be in charge of the money for the pet, and then you can have a separate person that's the caretaker. Mm-hmm. So depending on what someone's gifts and talents are, you could separate the money from the care, and then the caretaker would just ask the trustee to pay for the vet bill or the food or whatever. Right. There are some circumstances where pet trusts have been revised by the courts. Even Texas law says that if there's too much money in a pet trust, some of that money can be reallocated. So you want to talk to an attorney about getting those things right. We got to take a break. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Thanks.
Welcome to Talk Law Radio. I'm Todd Marquardt on the radio, on podcasts, on Facebook, on YouTube, and on talklawradio.com. Here with Kirk Harrison talking about estate planning, the definition of proper estate planning. And the first segment, we talked about controlling our property while we're alive. The second segment, we talked about using our property to take care of us and our loved ones if we become disabled. Now I want to talk about providing for a surviving spouse if you have one. This really hit home for me. I have a friend from church when I was just a young attorney who would ask me questions, and he's probably 50 years older than me.
Mm-hmm.
And so he told me this story about what happened when his dad died. When his dad died, his mom inherited everything.
Right.
And that was, in his mind, what the natural order of things should be. He didn't need the money. He had his own career, his own retirement. And so then his mom inherited everything. And then she got remarried. And he wasn't mad about that either, because he wanted her to be happy.
Right.
And she was happy.
Sense.
And she was taken care of. But then when she died, her new replacement husband, inherited everything from her. And that made him a little bit upset because that was the family money. Well, when her replacement husband died, he left everything to his kids. Now, that really made him mad, not because he needed the money. He just thought it was not fair.
Right.
And I told him, well, there's very easy things that could have been done to stop that situation from unfolding that way. But we call that an I love you will, where you just name your spouse to receive everything.
Right.
And they can do whatever they want with it. When I was a young attorney, I worked for another law firm, and we had a client. Her and her husband came in. They were like the Brady Bunch. He had kids from a prior marriage. She had kids from a prior marriage. And they were there because she was undergoing chemotherapy.
Okay.
Well, we got them all set up, and then she died. Her husband died.
Holy mackerel.
Yeah, he had a heart attack. Nobody saw that coming. She survived many years after that. And they had put in their wills that if one of them, or after both of them died, then all of the Brady Bunch kids would share equally. Well, after the husband died, his kids stopped coming over for Christmas and stopped sending cards for birthday and stopped making calls. And so she came back and she said, I want to change my will. I want to leave it to my own children. And we reminded her that they had promised each other that they were going to divide everything equally, but it wasn't mandatory, wasn't written that way. And so she, I call that the magic eraser. She could change everything.
Wow.
And since he's gone, she can do what she wants. So that's one way of doing it.
Yeah. You know, my dad died. My mom was a lot younger. As I said, you know, you folks wouldn't know this, but my birth mother died when I was like six. So my father remarried. Well, my mother who raised us was a lot younger. So she had a lot of life left. So now I'm in a family of seven, okay? So there's a bunch. And there was no question. None of us thought, and we're very fortunate in that point, when he died, she got everything. And nobody would contest that, you know, because my dad said, the minute he got us to 18 and out the door, I've done all I'm going to do.
Yeah.
You know, and we knew that was his way. Well, you know, we all went off. We all got degrees. We're all independently financially, I wouldn't say rich or anything, but comfortable. And when I see things like that, it's hard for me to understand because this is personal. Okay. I see it. When I hear about that, when brothers and sisters and siblings and all just go after each other, and I'm just, it's really something. It was very hard for me to understand that, but I'd seen it so many times, you know, and I'm sure some of you out there are like that. So what you're saying is important. You got to remember, you know, stuff happens, you know, you're counting on one thing and it goes the other way, you know.
And by having something in writing, right, that helps to make sure that your wishes are followed.
A little more security. That's right. That's pretty cool.
We don't get to choose our family members.
No, we don't. Yeah. Family members and neighbors.
Right. So last segment, you asked about what happens with remarriage. Well, I always ask, how would it make you feel if your spouse got remarried? Would you mind if some of your assets were used to make that person's life more comfortable? Well, if you ask me, I would say, I don't want that. I don't want that sleazeball using my money to go play golf or go to the movies or whatever. So if you're like me and you want to put some restrictions or stipulations on it, you can say, well, there's an imaginary division of the assets at the time of death. So the surviving spouse gets to keep her half because it's probably community property. And the deceased person can leave that half to a marital trust,
right,
or sometimes called a Q-tip, a qualified terminable interest property trust. And then after you decide that you do want it to be in trust, then you can decide how restrictive you want it to be. You can decide, for example, that you want your spouse to receive at least all of the income.
Right.
So if it's in investments, then it could be earning interest or dividends or capital gains.
Right.
And then you can go a step further and say, well, if that's not enough, if she's used all of her income and her retirement and all of the income off of this trust, if she still needs something, then the trustee can distribute some of the principal, the saved up portion of it.
That's interesting. You know, I've known both sides of the coin here as far as whether the new husband is a sleazeball or a really straight up guy or a woman, you know. I think my wife won't remarry because I think I've tarnished her on marriage. You know, after 37 years, I think she's probably had enough.
Well, there are statistics on that. What are the chances that a happily married woman would get remarried within 3 years of losing her husband? Well, it's about 10%.
Oh, really?
That she would get remarried, because most women will say, you think, I've had enough. But what are the chances that a happily married man would be remarried? Well, it's about 90%.
Well, yeah, because men are more, you know, people don't realize that. Men don't have, and I hate to say this, but I'm going to say it anyhow. You know, men are the anger that comes from the divorce and stuff like that. It just seems like men don't handle emotions well, okay? And they don't like change, okay? I realize a lot of people get married and the woman says, oh, I'm going to change him and make him just like, right, I want. And then the man gets married and he says, I want her to stay just the way she is. Guess what? It goes the other way, okay?
Right.
Right? She changes, you don't. And, you know, that brings a lot of animosity after the, you know, break up and stuff like that. But on occasion, and I know one lady I know who did get remarried, and wow, what a great guy. I mean, just it worked out very well for her. But it doesn't always work like that.
Well, you
believe
know,
me.
What else I worry about is my daughter.
Oh, yeah. Kids.
You know, if,
you're right.
If I leave her an inheritance and, God forbid, she dies, I don't want some jerk going to be spending her inheritance.
I think you feel strongly about this, don't y'all?
Yeah. Well, I hear all the bad
oh, yeah, I bet.
Bad
yeah,
news
you get
people come into
stories,
my office.
Yeah.
With people
that
have these problems. So let's go back to the surviving spouse and the trust that we've created for. You have some options about who you want to be in charge.
Right.
She could be in charge of her own trust, which is what we call the fox guarding the chicken coop, because she could take as much money out of it as she wants to. Well, if you want to put more restrictions on it, then you just name somebody else to be trustee instead of her so that she has to ask permission to get funds from the trust. And that could be one of the adult children. It could be a family friend. It could be a bank or a trust company. So that would make it more restrictive. And one reason a wife might want to do that is because since the husband needs to be taken care of by somebody, there might be some black widows coming out
right.
to try and take advantage of the guy. And if he has his inheritance in a trust, he can say, well, I hope you love me for love and not money, because I don't have that much access to my money. Just
wow.
something to think about. That's a different way of handling the inheritance for a married person.
And you had said earlier that you can put some particulars in there. I mean, if he dies and the wife is not the trustee, someone else is, you also could put stipulations, as you were saying earlier, where she gets so much off the interest or some other way for a revenue stream to come
right.
her way. So that's pretty good, you know.
Right.
But that she can't, you know, kill the gilded goose, as it were, because
that's
of
right.
the fact that it's still producing those gold eggs.
And then whatever's left would go to the beneficiaries that you've
yeah.
already designated.
Okay.
We got to take another break. When we come back, we'll be talking about what happens after the surviving spouse, the second spouse, dies. Stay tuned.
Secure your future today with Marquardt Law Firm. Gain peace of mind with a free consultation, crafting wills, trusts, and vital estate plans, guidance on elder law, Medicaid, veteran benefits, and more. Shield against legal hassles with their defense against Medicaid estate recovery. Trust in their proficiency for business law solutions, contracts, incorporations, and more. Empower your tomorrow. For info, go to MarquardtLawFirm.com. That's MarquardtLawFirm.com.
Welcome to Talk Law Radio. I'm Todd Marquardt here with Kirk Harrison, who's been asking me questions about living trusts and marital trusts and trusts for kids and trusts for pets. But now we're going to talk about the one of the last parts of the definition of proper estate planning, which is give what we have to whom we want, the way we want, and when we want.
You know, it's funny. You keep saying the name trust, and that's it. That's what it comes down to. Who do you trust? Who do you trust to take care of your stuff after you're gone? I mean, that's a tough one, okay? You know, you don't have – if you live your life and you're a very friendly person, even so, you only have so many close friends – and people close to you that you trust, right? What I always said is when it's the middle of the night and you're in jail for whatever reason, they pick you up. They bring you home and they don't ask you anything until the next day. So who's that person, okay? So you're going to make sure you got somebody you really trust when you come in to make a trust. I mean, the name is applicable
yeah,
for exactly what you're going to do.
I think God made us to be in community with one another.
Yes.
And we have to have people that we trust. I've had a few clients over the years that didn't like anybody and nobody liked them back. And it was harder for them to solve complicated problems, especially upon disability. Mm-hmm. But this part of the definition of proper estate planning, again, is give what we have to whom we want, the way we want, and when we want. And so there's an option here, if you think about a married couple giving everything to who they decide after both of them are gone. If you have kids, then it would be the kids. If you don't have kids, then it might be other family members, nieces and nephews, or charities. But the first option is, are we going to put any stipulations on that?
Right.
So we call no stipulations, leaving it outright to the beneficiary, with stipulations that would be in a testamentary trust. Testamentary means after death. So it's a new trust that springs to life. And
wow.
So this is where I go back to whether my daughter's married to the jerk or whether my son's married to the witch. If I want to keep it in the bloodline, then if my daughter dies, God forbid, then her share would go to her kids if she has any. If my son died, God forbid, his share would go to his kids. And then that way, the surviving spouse, their surviving spouse, if they're a former in-law, we call them an outlaw or an ex-law. I don't want to finance their new spouse and their new family because chances are they're not going to be paying attention to the bloodline anyway.
Right.
Or let's say that your kids married the perfect spouse. Your daughter married the son you never had, or your son married the daughter you never had. Well, you still might want to leave it to them in a trust to protect their inheritance from business setbacks, divorce,
right,
economic downturns, or frivolous litigation. So we didn't think that COVID was going to come. We've all experienced the flu before that, and we survived, you know, the basic flu, and so we didn't know that there was another kind of flu that would be much worse for some people. Well, that caused economic downturn. So even if you think that your children are angels that spend their money in only the most appropriate ways, they're never in trouble with their debts, there could be something like an economic downturn. Well, even if they lose all of their own money, their inheritance could be protected from their creditors.
That makes sense. I mean, here in Texas, too, I think 401ks and all are very difficult if you go in. Texas made some good laws when it comes to that. I know I have some experiences on that. And, you know, I have a trust, so I know for my son, and I know it was important to us to have that for him, and how it was explained to me, you know, one, as you're saying, that they can't come in and just take it, okay? Because the state or the government, whichever one decides, a lot of times they're going to come in. They don't, you know, you can say it all you want. Government doesn't have a heart. Government is just government. So if you're looking for hearts and all, you know, that's why you stop by church, right? And you'll find yourself surrounded by that. But when you go to the government, if you're going to them for anything, it ain't going to work out the way you think. So it is pretty important.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. There are different kinds of trusts. And so we've been talking about almost the whole show about a living revocable trust and the different stages that it has and how it follows the definition of proper estate planning. But there are other kinds of trusts that could be set up for different purposes. If there's a personal injury settlement, or there's even other kinds for protecting assets from federal estate tax. This year, the federal estate tax exemption is very high. It's $13,600,000. If you leave less than that, then you don't have to pay federal estate tax. If you do have more than that, now's a good opportunity to set up a type of trust to take advantage of that high exemption, because the job, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act that set the exemption that high is going to expire at the end of 2025, and then that exemption will be cut in half.
Okay, everybody raise their hand that's got more money than that that they want to leave behind. You'll notice I'm not raising mine.
No, so. But some ranches in Texas have become very valuable. So even if somebody doesn't have a lot of money in the bank,
they
still could be over that line.
Overall
just because
wealth,
of the land that they might be using just for hunting or farming or maybe they don't use it for anything. They just want to keep it in the family just in case. So at our office, we don't just haphazardly put documents together. We have a whole system and process because I want to make sure that all of the boxes are checked and all of the questions are answered. So depends on the size of the estate and the complexities within somebody's family, but we could have as many as four different meetings. We can have a pre-consultation meeting. We can have an initial consultation meeting. We can have a design meeting, and then we can have the signing ceremony. And those four meetings are set up to help make sure that we know everything that our clients are worried about. And
right.
We know what all their goals and objectives are, and for them to learn estate planning.
So you really got to get to know them.
Right.
I mean, I imagine an initial meeting, you got to get to know them. I mean, that's pretty important because sometimes through just natural conversation, you find out more about people, about what they're really thinking and how they approach the world, their own culture. So that's going to be pretty important, those meetings. So like I said, you know, you got to get through the weeds, okay? And you got somebody here with a weed whacker that's going to explain it to you. And that's a good thing. Look, we did it with our family, and we're not – I can guarantee you now, you know, I've been in the trash business for 28 years. I've saved some money, but I'm not up around the $13 million range. But the fact is you want to make sure that people are taken care of, and that is why there are so many meetings. It's not because – he's trying to stretch you out. It's because he wants to make sure you understand exactly what you want and he's going to design it to hopefully meet all those needs.
Yeah, we want to make sure that it's accomplishing your objectives, and we want to make sure that you understand what you're getting. And it helps to find an attorney that you like.
Right.
Because I've had some clients that said, I had an attorney before, but I didn't want to go back to them because you are going to have to divulge some private, personal confidential information. And at our office, we take that very seriously. So we might give you some homework, questionnaires,
that makes sense.
Checklists, just to make sure that we've covered everything that you might have concerns about. One of them's called the Estate Planning Deficiencies Checkup. And this is just something we hand out to you so that you can see what are some of the issues that we're looking for. And you get to decide, you know, whether you have that problem or not. We also have another homework assignment that's all about your concerns and important family questions. One thing that we've been noticing a lot is people during COVID and after moved from somewhere else to Texas.
Right.
Texas is a great place to live. You moved from somewhere else to Texas. I moved from somewhere else to Texas.
Yep.
And so Texas has community property, but some of the other states, they just have what we call a common law property, which is really name on the title type property.
Right. Wow.
You're from Louisiana.
Yep.
And so that you have the Napoleonic
code. Still there. Still is. Napoleon. They're old. I remember the first time I bought some property, I had to go back and look it up, you know, look at the history and all on it to make sure, you know, it was all taken care of. I was kind of on my own. And it was still in French when you got a certain distance back.
Wow.
Yeah. So you had to have somebody come in and talk to you. And they also, in the old days, used to be, I think they called it octanes or something like that. where the shape of the property was almost like an octagon.
Okay.
Okay. So the problem was, now that you've got these square shapes like acres, well, the corner might not be taken care of, all right, because it doesn't match up.
Right.
So you could build a property, and all of a sudden the corner of your house is in somebody else's property, and he looked it up, and now he's saying, hey, you can either move your house or you can pay me this much money for this corner. So that right there, when you get – and they're not going to change it. The Poliana code is still going to be there. I mean, people like it because of the fact that, you know, especially South Louisiana being so French, and the fact that the whole state is parishes instead of counties.
Right.
I mean, so you're talking about a very heavy Catholic influence and also, you know, a very heavy French influence. And you'll notice from my accent
tradition.
At times. Yes. So when you come from a state like that to Texas, it's a little bit of a change.
Yeah, it might affect the way you and
right.
your spouse are going to divide things up upon death.
Right. And now with California, you know, where they want to follow you for your taxes, when you go to another state and tax you, that's stunning right there. That's incredible that they're going to come after you when you leave the state.
Yeah, we'll have to see if the Supreme Court upholds something
like that. Yeah,
wouldn't
that be nice? But
well, I didn't get to talk too much about my legacy, but I might be able to say this fast enough. My purpose and mission for Talk Law Radio, number one, is to go and tell you about my faith and to be a light for how this lawyer lives his faith. Number two, to inspire you to pursue your dreams and create a legally enforceable legacy that can be passed down as an inheritance to your loved ones. And of course, to help you protect you from your hidden issue legal blind spots by listening to me talk about the law on the radio, and to remind you of your constitutional rights to defend freedom, exercise liberty, strengthen the national economy, which brings prosperity to us all. Talk to you later.
See y'all.